Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, October 9, 2020. South Sudan's military sentences 26 errant soldiers for various crimes, including rape.
I'm very happy with what the government did, and it brought some changes, especially in Yei. Nowadays, we can't hear the cases of rape, even looting, were not happening in the same fashion.
Japan donates millions of dollars for families affected by floods in Sudan.
The swarm came to Sudan, did one of the heaviest damages, and we recognized that the harm done to Sudan would be so severe that it could cause serious malnutrition to a number of people. We've decided to provide the emergency grant aid.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A military court-martial in South Sudan's capital, Juba, sentenced 24 military officers for committing crimes including raping, looting, attempted murder, and selling guns. A lawyer representing some of the victims of the crimes says, while he welcomes the verdict, he would like the families of the victims to be compensated for the various crimes committed. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Case number 238.
Military Judge Captain Joseph James announces the sentences yesterday at a military headquarters in Belfam, Juba. The public announcement was made during a military parade attended by hundreds of soldiers and top military brass, including Army Chief of Defense Forces General Johnson Juma Okot. General Okot says the announcement was made in public with the backdrop of an army parade to make soldiers realize if they do not adhere to the law, they will face the consequences.
This is the cleanness. Anyone who sells a rifle, we will take out. The one that sells bullets is our enemy. We will take out. Anyone who takes someone's wife or a girl in a wrong way, all these are crimes we are trying to get rid of.
Most of the soldiers convicted of rape were sentenced anywhere from 6 to 14 years, while others were sentenced to prison for looting and selling government-issued rifles. Their sentences ranged from 2 to 12 years. All of them were stripped of their ranks and dismissed from the army. Two of the 24 sentenced soldiers were a lieutenant colonel and a captain. Colonel John Guy was sentenced to 2 years in prison for selling a rifle, while Captain Joseph Lewis was sentenced to 14 years for raping a young girl. General Okot told the soldiers to reconsider their behaviors and avoid engaging in criminal activities.
We should not again return to play with anything connected to the army, security, anything that interferes with the respect of the law. Let's respect it because we will no longer play with the law.
Army spokesman Major General Lulu Roy Kwong says Thursday's sentencing should send a strong message to all soldiers.
You will only be free when you are not against the law. The minute you commit a crime, you will be held accountable no matter how long it takes. You will eventually get all of you.
Some of the rape victims South Sudan in Focus contacted for comment declined to be recorded, saying they fear for their lives. Alex Kenyi Lokosang is a paramount chief of Otogo, a village located 5 miles west of Yei town, where some of the worst crimes were committed.
I'm very happy with what the government did. and it brought some changes, especially in Ye. Nowadays, we can't hear the cases of rape, even looting were not happening. It was only one which happened last month in Ombachi, but the person who did, he escaped. She made rape with two small girls in the same family.
Kenya says army leaders should be consistent in the discipline of its officers. He says the government should establish a military court in Yei. He says the court which had these most cases was composed of officers who traveled from Juba to Yei. He says most soldiers would be more disciplined if a military court were present on the ground in Yei. Kenya says the soldiers abuse forced thousands of Ye civilians to flee to refugee camps in Uganda and DR Congo.
Before, what they were doing is not all right. It forced most population into exile. But now when the judiciary were brought in, I think there's now calm. Even people have started returning back.
Taban Oliver, a legal aid officer with the South Sudan Law Society who represented some of the victims during the trial, welcomed the verdict.
By passing the verdict and putting these perpetrators into prison is a fulfillment of the public interest to see that perpetrators are brought before book and to stop their sentence. However, to the victims, as on the private interest, the victims will only say justice has been admitted to them when they are given their remedy. Yes. So not until their compensations are done, then we'll say the victims got their justice.
Rech Malwal, Executive Director of Screen of Rights, an organization that provides legal aid to women who have suffered sexual assault, also welcomed the sentencing.
So it is a commendable effort that should be applauded, and the army is encouraged to continue the same practice and be able to make sure that every individual army officer, whether it is man or a woman, if they are reported to have done something like that, the public deserve a justice.
Members of the South Sudan Army have been accused by several rights groups of rape, murder, and other serious crimes. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The chief of the United Nations mission in South Sudan says forceful disarmament will not work in the country. David Chiara says provisions of basic services to communities with high cases of intercommunal fighting would minimize conflict in the country. The executive director of a local non-profit in Jonglei State says the government is not doing enough to protect vulnerable communities. For VOA News, David Monodaga
reports from Juba. David Chiara says armed civil groups should be disarmed peacefully rather than by force, because community members often feel they need to have guns to protect themselves from other groups. He tells South Sudan in Focus in an exclusive interview that forceful disarmament makes communities feel vulnerable to attacks. He says the government needs to foster trust between communities.
It needs to be bringing these parties together, the ethnic groups together, reconciling and building peace amongst them, looking at ways in which they can trust each other, they can work alongside and live alongside each other without fighting. And when that's happened, then you start looking at taking weapons from people or asking people to hand their weapons over. And they feel secure, so they're willing to hand over their weapons.
The government is conducting voluntary disarmament campaigns in Warap and Lake states. However, in both states, local leaders say few civilians have voluntarily handed over their guns. Jonah Chek Dimabior, executive director of the Jonglei Institute for Peace, Democracy and Development, says civilian disarmament will fail to achieve peace between communities because people feel the government is not doing enough to protect them, so they buy guns.
That is why we have cattle raiding on daily basis, child abduction on daily basis, killing of innocent civilian on daily basis, and road ambushes. And these people who are doing all this, they are all civilian. They are not national army.
to prevent people from buying more guns after they are disarmed. Dimabior says the government should create an atmosphere in which civilians are willing to hand over the weapons they own. He says the government could also offer civilians money for every gun they surrender.
Two is buying of this arm from the hand of civilians. For example, maybe the civilian have around 2 million firearms. The easy way is that the government of South Sudan should be able to use like $6 million to get 2 million firearms, not just buying them and store them, but buying them and destroy them.
Shera says the government should also provide basic services to communities where violent intercommunal conflicts is rampant. He says ANMIS has learned that intercommunal conflicts are sometimes caused by a lack of education, water for people and cattle, and a lack of economic opportunities. Shera says a few years ago, ANMIS built a road from Bor to Pibor in Jongole State, where the Dinka and Murule communities have engaged in intercommunal attacks for several years. He says within weeks, goods from the Bor area were able to flow to Pibor when community prices were very high in the market.
People were able to buy them. At the same time, the Murule were able to take their cattle down to the big cattle markets in Bor and sell their cattle. So both sides were benefiting from this. Cattle were being sold, money was being made, markets were being stimulated, people were able to get good goods to be able to buy.
Dimabior says the government should quickly implement Chapter 2 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement, which focuses on security arrangements, including training and unifying the various armed groups into a national force so that a trained professional army can safely disarm civilians. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
The United Nations World Food Programme is the recipient of the 2020 Nobel Peace Prize for its effort to combat hunger. The Norwegian Nobel Committee said WFP is, quote, a driving force in efforts to prevent the use of hunger as a weapon of war and conflict, end quote. The 2020 Nobel Peace Prize winner will pocket $1.1 million. WFP Director David Beasley told Associated Press news agency, it was, quote, the first time in my life I have been without words, end quote. Japan has donated $1.7 million to the United Nations World Food Programme to support families in eastern Sudan. WFP says thousands of families in eastern Sudan lost their livelihood and are at risk because desert locusts destroyed their crops. WFP officials say 78,000 families in Kassala and Red Sea State will benefit from the Japanese donation. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a retired South African colonel says his country is to blame for the crisis in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you change or maintain your country's reputation?
Oh, first of all, change the positions of the police officers and even in the army, because it's not well organized. There's a lot of corruption in it.
I would like to encourage the people around the country to maintain the good behaviors in the country. And when it is bad, maybe I would encourage them to copy from other countries which are doing good outside.
Unity anyway, unity. Cooperation. Cooperation among the nationals. It can promote our country.
In talking about the peace in this country, it would make people be more interested.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, has welcomed a new initiative by the governments of Sudan and South Sudan to address the needs of more than 5 million people displaced in the two countries. UNHCR spokesman in Khartoum says his agency stands ready to fully support the program for the needs of displaced people in Sudan and South Sudan. For VOA News, Nabil Biajo has more from Washington.
UNHCR spokesman in Khartoum, Ronald Schombauer, says the program, when implemented, is going to benefit millions of refugees from both Sudan and South Sudan, as well as internally displaced persons, or IDPs, in both countries.
In Sudan, there is over 1.8 million IDPs, internally displaced Sudanese, living not in their villages and towns, but displaced. In South Sudan, there's 1.6 million South Sudanese internally displaced. And both countries host the refugees of the other country. So Sudan hosts over 800,000 South Sudanese refugees, and South Sudan is a temporary home to 280,000 Sudanese refugees. But there is more refugees, particularly of Sudan, in the region. For instance, Chad hosts 370,000.
Schonbauer says the solutions will include the voluntary repatriation of displaced persons or their integration into host societies, which he says UNHCR will facilitate.
Solutions for the displaced communities can have different forms, but all will require education, all will require health clinics, all will require opportunities for those that either return or stay where they are, opportunities to care for themselves, to get back on their own feet, to find work and sustain their families. So the form of the solution can be different if it is return, which is what most refugees that I met is what they yearn for. They want to go back home. Then this return would have to be voluntary, safe, and dignified.
Schonbauer says if refugees choose to return home, and according to Schonbauer, most of them do, their return would be voluntary and safe. In the case of displaced people who would like to integrate into local communities, the program will provide not just humanitarian assistance, but also healthcare, education, and livelihood opportunities. He says addressing the problem of displacement in Sudan and South Sudan is crucial for the success of the peace agreements in both countries.
There won't be a sustainable peace if there is no end to displacement. And how do you get an end to displacement? You need to end the conflicts. You need to find solutions, particularly around land issues that have caused some of the conflicts and some of the displacement. So it's great. UNHCR wholeheartedly supports the two governments in prioritizing refugees and IDPs.
Schonbauer is calling on international donors and partners to step up their support for the initiative to help refugees in both countries.
The situation of the South Sudanese, for instance, who are displaced within the country and to Sudan, is terribly underfunded. So we have a program, we know the needs, we know what needs to be done, and we appreciate the donor support that has been coming in, particularly also in Sudan, but there is still a major funding gap, so we cannot provide all the support and assistance to refugees and IDPs in these countries that is needed now.
Besides financial support, Schonbauer says regional and international actors must also drive political support for the program. He says the program must be implemented with the full participation of refugees, IDPs, and returnees from Sudan and South Sudan in order for it to succeed. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biajo in Washington.
The Daily Maverick of South Africa has reviewed a book on South Sudan entitled No Justice, No Mercy, a story of South Sudan. The author of the book, retired Colonel William John Enley, who was sentenced to death in South Sudan and released by a presidential pardon, says his book reveals personal vested interests of some top South African officials in the affairs of South Sudan. Enley says he believes personal interests of ANC leaders and their bias towards President Salva Kiir prolonged the conflict in South Sudan. He says his book has shed more lights on South Africa's interferences into South Sudan's conflict. From South Africa, we move to the United States. The vice presidential debate between Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris highlighted differences between their approaches to foreign policy and America's role in the world. The two candidates debated whether President Donald Trump or Democratic nominee Joe Biden would do a better job addressing challenges by U.S. rivals, China, and its long-term adversary, Iran. White House correspondent Patsy Widakwasara reports.
The coronavirus has dominated American politics in recent months, but in this week's vice presidential debate, Vice President Mike Pence and his Democratic opponent, Senator Kamala Harris, argued their view of U.S. foreign policy in the Middle East and China, issues that have had less focus in the campaign so far. Pence highlighted the recent Abraham Accords that normalized Israel's relations with United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. He said the administration subdued Iran by assassinating its chief military strategist, Qasem Soleimani, and defeated ISIS.
President Trump unleashed the American military, and our armed forces destroyed the ISIS caliphate and took down their leader, al-Baghdadi, without one American casualty.
Kamala Harris said America is less safe because of Trump's unilateral approach to foreign policy. Citing the administration's 2018 withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal, achieved in 2015 with ally support.
What we have seen with Donald Trump is that he has betrayed our friends and embraced dictators around the world.
The Iran nuclear deal is a key difference between Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden, with Biden promising to return to it immediately if elected. Alex Vatanka is the director of the Iran program at the Middle East Institute.
That would put Israel and some of the other U.S. allies in the region, the Persian Gulf region, plus countries like Saudi Arabia, they would then be on the defensive, and that would be a challenge. But I'm not at this point convinced that that would create a rupture in U.S. Israel relations, or for that matter, U.S.-Saudi relations.
Pence slammed Biden for being a cheerleader for communist China. He said the administration wants to improve relations with Beijing, but that Trump will also hold China accountable for the pandemic.
China and the World Health Organization do not play straight with the American people.
Harris accused Trump of hurting American jobs and economy because of his trade war with China. She cited recent global opinion polls by Pew Research that indicated U.S. allies now respect China's Xi Jinping more than they do Donald Trump.
This is where we are today because of a failure of leadership by this administration.
The Pence-Harris debate outlined a difference in foreign policy between Trump's America First doctrine and Biden's multilateral approach. If elected, Biden has promised he would return the U.S. to leadership roles in international organizations like the World Trade Organization and Trans-Pacific Partnership to contain adversaries, including China. Robert Daly is the director of the Wilson Center's Kissinger Institute on China and the United States.
That, I think, would produce less uncertainty in the U.S.-China relationship. I think the nature of the relationship, fundamentally contentious and adversarial, would be the same in a second Trump term or in a Biden term.
While foreign policy is usually not at the forefront of voters' minds, one important issue this year is standing up for Israel, which matters to a key group of Trump supporters, evangelical Christians who made up about a third of Trump's backers in 2016. Both Trump and Biden have pledged continuous support for Israel. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. A military court-martial in Juba has sentenced 24 soldiers, including a lieutenant colonel and a captain, to prison for several crimes, including rape, attempted murder, looting, and selling rifles. Military Judge Captain Joseph James announced the sentences in public yesterday at military headquarters in Juba, which coincided with a military parade attended by hundreds of soldiers and top military brass. Most of the soldiers convicted of rape were sentenced to anywhere from 6 to 14 years in prison. Other soldiers were sentenced to less years in prison for looting and selling government-issued weapons. All of them were stripped of their ranks and dismissed from the army. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says in order for the country's civilian disarmament campaign to succeed, the government must first build trust among the country's warring communities. UNMISS boss David Shearer says the government should also improve service delivery in communities where many civilians are armed so that people see the benefit of peaceful coexistence. Some civil society activists say the campaign is failing because many people feel the government cannot guarantee their security. Shearer says armed civil groups should be disarmed peacefully rather than by force because many people feel the need to protect themselves. The government is conducting voluntary disarmament campaigns in Warrap and Lake states. And finally, UNHCR is welcoming a new solutions initiative by the governments of Sudan and South Sudan to address the needs of some 5 million displaced people in both countries. The foreign ministers of Sudan and South Sudan launched the initiative at a virtual meeting yesterday chaired by UNHCR in Geneva and attended by members of IGAD. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Dendam.
Before we end this show, I have a special announcement for you. This program can now be heard in South Sudan at 7:30 p.m. local time on VOA affiliate stations. Please inform your friends and relatives. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now take you to South Africa for the song Umkombochi by Yvonne Chaka Chaka.
When my time in, whoopum kombochi.
I work hard every day to make my bread.
Umkombochi.
Wake up early every morning to please my people with African bread.
Umkombochi. Umkombochi. Umkombochi.
Make sure the fire burns
We've been listening to Yvonne Chaka Chaka with the song Umkombochi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.